This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's a special industry chatter today with the new leaders of ACT-IACT, Aaron Ash and Dale Ludke. Good to see you again, my friend.
Good to see you. Good to see you, Francis.
Both of you are the ACT-IACT leaders now for the 2012-2013 year. Dale, you're succeeding Jim Beaupre, and Darren, you're succeeding Mary Davey. We'll start with you, Darren. Talk about the transition and what your vision is for the ACT side as you take over for Mary and move this organization forward
Francis,
this year.
Francis, thank you. That was I worked very closely with Mary this last year, and a lot of it really is grounded in what learning from her experience, her lessons learned, what could we do as government leaders, as those that are really leading and creating, establishing the agenda for ACT-IACT. And one of the things that Mary had advised me about was focus on those things that you thought that ACT-IACT could accomplish in the term. What could you look back in at the end of June of next year, which is the end of my term, and be proud of? What did you accomplish? And frankly, from an ACT-IACT perspective, what are those outcomes that we can be most proud of in terms of how can we improve, how did we improve how government operates?
Now, I know you to be a very deliberate and very disciplined leader, so I bet you have a list. I bet one of the first things you did when you got that advice was you started to make notes and made a list. What's on that list?
We did. And actually, it started off back in February. It was something that Mary had started and did, which was a strategic planning offsite. We did this on a cold Saturday, our own time, and really through a really good group effort came up with a number of priorities. What we chose to do, what I chose to do in partnership with Dale, is identify those critical few, those that we felt that were most important. One of those, which is gets to the really the foundation of the roots of really what ACT-IACT is. Again, we're chartered, missioned to improve how government operates, improve the missions of government. But we hold a large number of events. We have different shared interest groups. Again, these are public-private type of activities. We have different products, different papers, different things that we do. The thing that that grew out of that strategic planning is how do we connect them all? So rather than just having a conference, we've got, and we'll talk later about the Executive Leadership Conference coming up, you don't want to just go to a conference and at the end of it, okay, that was great information, great speakers, panels, and so forth. Our interest was what can we do with what came out of that conference or that event and build upon it so that as you go through the year, you build and build upon it so you actually come up with some tangible, tactical ideas and outcomes.
I want to follow up on a couple of those things, but Dale, I want to ask you, you're filling big shoes. Jim is a terrific leader in government.
He very much is.
Tell me what your thought process was similar following him to what similar to what Darren's was following Mary.
So I think one of the very important considerations is the significance of this partnership that exists between ACT and IACT. It's very unique, and it's one that says ACT is coming together with a key look at how it is that we can strategically do exactly what we want to go do, which is to bring about a higher degree of learning, collaboration, understanding between government and industry about finding, acquiring, and utilizing technology for the benefit of mission and business. So they came up with this strategy. And that was the catalyst, if you will. And so the IACT team says, based on this strategy, what are the key areas of opportunity? What are the key areas of objective that we can set that'll help start to drive some reality into this overall strategy? So on my part, I took that strategy, worked with Darren, and based on the IACT board structure, aligned, if you will, their roles and responsibilities and expected outcomes to the very kinds of things that are in the ACT agenda. And then, of course, Darren did something very similar with his team in that he aligned them to committee activities, which would also support that. This is a little bit different in that we now are setting not just an agenda for ourselves, but we're setting expectations for outcomes, back to what Darren said. And then being able to say at any point in time during the year, not just at the end of the year, are we actually making anything happen? Are we actually accomplishing anything? So our role as the IACT organization is to bring to life this strategy that the ACT board's put together.
How has this dynamic changed, not just within ACT-IACT necessarily, but across the whole landscape over the past year or so as we've seen the budget challenges, we've seen action in Congress as they look at the relationship between agencies and industry and all of that? What's the role that you see ACT-IACT playing in that dynamic as well? Dale, start with you on that one.
So I think one of the key areas of there, Francis, is ground truth. What is ground truth? There's a whole lot of potential for distraction. We know there's a lot of budget pressures. There's a lot of curiosity, if you will, about what is or is not a good application to use in what particular instance, what does or does not make for good security, what does or does not make for good mobility policy. All these things around agile development or buy, there's a whole lot of potential for clutter. Get some ground truth in there. Start to put things into play that we can start to define what is the exact issue that we want to try to solve, and how do we now approach it where we can get to biteable chunks?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think our working with the ACT board says, what are the things you all view as biteable chunks that we can take on to start to show progress against them? And that to me is probably the most significant factor that we're offering here now going forward, as opposed to trying to boil the ocean.
Darren?
For me, it's dialogue. It's the communications in multiple ways. One is government to government, creating avenues and forums for IT leaders, technology leaders to actually talk with each other in forums that don't necessarily always exist within around town. Typically, we go down for a meeting, we attend the meeting, and we leave. We don't have a lot of opportunities to share ideas with our peers. That's one thing. The other one is the industry to government dialogue, the sharing of ideas, and most importantly, that it's industry and vendor neutral, which is important for us to better understand what's going on out there. What are the best practices? For technology leaders, it's not wanting, we don't want to reinvent the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, for the technology leaders, learning from another agency, learning from somebody from industry about some best practices out there, getting those contacts, that's wonderful opportunities. I don't want to reinvent the wheel, especially in tight budget times.
And I was just going to say, that's happening at a time where I think agencies are more receptive to borrowing / stealing good ideas from other agencies than they ever have been before.
And if somebody's got a best practice, I want to learn it. We can adapt it to the agency. But if somebody also made a mistake or they learned from it, I don't want to repeat that same mistake.
Now, you are coming off a year as the leader of a firm. You're glutton for punishment, I guess. You did a terrific job there. And I thank you, by the way, for the chances that I had to participate in a firm event.
You're welcome.
Over the past year. I enjoyed every single one of them. But what did you learn from that experience that you're going to be able to apply to this leadership role with ACT?
I think part of it gets back to my prior point, which is the dialogue, knowing that there is some really good stuff out there, some great success stories, but you've got to get that out there into the public domain for other agencies, other organizations, and know what's going on. And a firm provided that through the panels, but I think through ACT-IAC, you get it through not just a standalone stovepipe panel, and all the panels were very good, excellent. You take it and build upon it, which gets back to that continuum concept.
Mm-hmm. The communications piece is very important. Was very important to Jim. I know it's important to you too, just from conversations we've had in the past, Dale. What's the best way that you think that this organization can drive that dialogue in all the channels that Darren talked about?
So again, there's a lot of diversity around how we conduct things. We, of course, have our programs and conferences, which are a great forum, if you will, for people to have an open, trusted dialogue about where the realities are as far as issues and concerns. The other, of course, is our professional development activities, the Voyagers program, Partners program. There's a new program coming on called the Associates program, which will address even the younger population coming into the workforce. Those provide one-on-one, four-on-one kind of conversation activities that actually build understanding. You're starting to now build an awareness and appreciation for who is dealing with what scenarios at what point in time. And, of course, then we have our new Institute for Innovation, which provides even a different level of view as far as how do you take specific areas of study and drive a different dialogue around those. And, of course, we have our shared interest groups, which is, again, a collaborative activity with a government industry person involved to define what areas should we be focusing on as far as building expectation around a conversation with some degree of outcome? All right. So I look at the avenues that we have for communicating, if you will. But I think in the end, Francis, it has to do with setting expectations and driving an outcome. I think people lose interest in the conversation when they think nothing is happening. And I think to the degree that we can show them something is happening, it's real, it's alive, and it's got value going forward for both the government and the industry partner.
Let's dig into that. You've both talked about outcome pretty extensively already. So let's dig into what some of the outcomes are that you'd like to see when you're finished next June, and we'll talk about the folks that are coming up behind you on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The new leadership of ACT IAC, Dale Ludeke and Darren Ash, in with me all hour long on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This week's Experts in Health topic is the flu vaccine, featuring Dr. Peter Kadlecek, an infectious disease physician with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Capitol Hill Medical Center.
Flu season is almost here. That means it's time for your annual flu shot. Influenza is a serious disease that can lead to hospitalization and, in some cases, death. Between October and May, flu viruses circulate throughout our communities. An important way to fight against influenza is to get an annual flu vaccine, particularly for those who are at high risk for developing complications should they get sick. These include people with chronic medical conditions like asthma and diabetes, pregnant women, and people over 65 years old. At Kaiser Permanente, we are the best in the region at ensuring adults receive their flu shots.
Dr. Kadlecek was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian magazine. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. Flu shot for adult rate as reported in 2011 HEDIS.
The Air Traffic Management Report, provided by Raytheon.
Did you know that weather accounts for 70% of all air traffic delays in the U.S.? Delivering more information more quickly to air traffic controllers and pilots means significantly reducing the impact of weather on your travel. Raytheon engineers are leveraging more than 60 years of aviation experience to bring more precise weather forecast into the air management arena. That means safer travel and fewer delays in getting to your destination.
Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Thursday's Federal Drive. We'll be broadcasting live from the AFSEA Health IT Day. Hear the latest developments in treatment of traumatic brain injury. It's all happening at the Military Health Service. Plus, FEMA stages a drill to see how things would work in a major earthquake. We'll find out what's happening during the Southeast shakeout. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's a special industry chatter today with the new leaders of ACT IAC, Darren Ash and Dale Ludeke, in studio with me all hour long. And both of you mentioned outcomes a lot and how you're focused on outcomes and tracking them, not just for when you leave office in June, but all in between. And Dale, you made a pretty impassioned case for why that's important just a moment ago. Talk about what some of the outcomes that you're planning on executing, what they are. What the most ambitious to me sounded like these quadrennial review papers that you're in the process of developing.
We are in the process of developing, and they will be released at the ELC coming up here. And it's we're going to discuss areas like the new health economy, business and IT, if you will, STEM, the whole science, technology, education, and math area, national security, fiscal stewardship, citizen-centered government. What do our citizens' engagement look like there? So we're tackling these kinds of things, which are very topical in nature. The expectation now that the outcome we're looking for is not just put the paper out. The outcome is to put the paper out and then start to use content from that paper and the dialogue built around it to build new subject matter. New subject matter that will go into programs, our forums, our professional learning activities, our conferences, the conference tracks, if you will. Perhaps even the Institute for Innovation will take on a particular area that comes out as a discussion point or an area of interest from those papers. So the outcome we're looking for is not just the paper itself, but what's going to follow that paper. And so when I talked about the objectives that I laid out for the IAC chairs this year, I laid in their expectations that they would take that and build content from that within their particular program areas. So that's just one example.
Who is involved, Darren, in putting these together? When I see something, who's behind it?
Primarily industry. I mean, it's a multiple different companies that are involved in this. The ACT Board has reviewed and provided some input and some thoughts and some comments about the papers themselves, but primarily it's industry.
But as I listen to Dale talk about the areas that these papers are going to cover, it sounds like everything that you and your colleagues, not just CIO colleagues, but in the C-suites in general across government, are really trying to tackle.
That's correct. And the ultimate intent is using these papers, as Dale said, to build upon them, flow them into the different activities, the things that we do, but use it to start. Maybe a key point about the quadrennial review papers is that they're nonpartisan, they're industry neutral, company neutral. They're intended to identify those opportunities for the administration. These are the big issues for the country, where technology and other facets of technology can help solve some of those issues. Not necessarily solve it in 1 year or 1 week, but to help move the vector in the right direction. It's input. It's some thought leadership, and it's some great ideas. And I think for the ACT Board, for us, we don't want, and I think as Dale has talked about, we don't want just the papers to be delivered and that's it. We want to take and actually start to do something with them.
And when you talk about that, I mean, I think we both could probably fill all of our homes, all three of us could fill our homes with white papers that were released and just kind of fell to the ground and nothing else happened with them. You talk, Dale, about developing content based on those papers. What will that look like?
So, for instance, would be if you take something like the fiscal stewardship area. As opposed to just writing the paper and letting it sit down, we would actually look to engage those who are the functional users or the functional implementers of a fiscal strategy. Perhaps it's the AGA. Perhaps it's the CFOs. Perhaps it's some other functional attribute that's not necessarily IT-centric, but it's the users of the IT. Engage them directly and start to talk to them about this white paper and its content, its relevance to them, and start looking for things that would be additive or impacting, if you will, that would be impacting to them, not just the IT community. And then that generates a new kind of outcome, one that's a value add across a larger community than just the IT community.
And that's a big benefit, Darren, to somebody in your shoes, because all of your colleagues that I talk to say either I'm happy that I'm being more embroidered into the CXO suite in my agency, or I really should be because IT is not just an add-on anymore. It's built into everything that my agency does.
And that's a key component of that business and IT management alignment. The CIO of an organization needs to be a full business partner to help drive the mission, support the mission, not just the person that's going to fix the printer. I may be exaggerating, but in some organizations, they tend to think of the IT person as...
And I still hear that more often than I would think that I should hear that in 2012, given how important IT is to the execution of every mission across government. So I'm not surprised to hear you still say that.
It's important. I think it's not just we're important, but IT, information technology, is so central to what we do in how we deliver citizen services. We had a meeting today with the acting administrator of GSA, and he made some very important insights about, you know, at one point the federal government delivered services via buildings. I mean, we occupy agencies occupy buildings. A citizen would come in, obtain those services, receive a check, whatever they would do. The way we deliver services is very different today. It is through the internet. It's through technology. It's through our smartphones. And how do we best position the agencies to do that and deliver that both efficiently and effectively?
You mentioned Dan Tangerlini, and we've talked about ELC a couple of times already in this, the Executive Leadership Conference happening starting October 28th, I believe, is the first day in Williamsburg. So it's just about 2 weeks away. And there's a connection there, and we'll make that connection and talk more about ELC in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Darren Ash and Dale Ludeke, my guests for the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International.
Howard Hayes, Acting Director of the Office of Information Technology at the Indian Health Service, talks about the future of health IT.
The industry is going more toward a pay-per-performance model as opposed to a pay-by-service model. The ability to evaluate performance and to show performance is really important.
Agency of the Month, Wednesdays in October at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
To have the greatest impact, you must tackle the most important problems. All over the world, ICF International applies strategy, science, and technology to help clients achieve measurable results, including healthier people and vibrant communities. This is ICF International, and their work helps government health programs, like those run by the National Institutes of Health, improve the quality of life. Find out how ICF's informatics, research, and communication work helps make a difference at ICFI.com.
The Commuter Info Report, brought to you by Commuter Connections.
Since the first HOV highway was built on I-395 in Virginia, the concept has spread across the country as a means to combat congestion and air pollution. Locally, two HOV ramps have closed to allow for ongoing express lanes construction. On I-95, the southbound HOV ramp to Lorton was permanently closed early this month. And for morning commuters on eastbound I-66, the left HOV ramp to the Inner Loop was closed last week. It'll reopen as an Easy Pass only ramp in December. I'm Dave Dildine.
These days, keeping your money is harder than ever. Some folks are even going to extremes, like freezing money in blocks of ice, storing it under mattresses, hiding it under the litter box. We'd like to suggest something different, something easier. Sign up to Rideshare and save on gas. It'll help you keep your money.
Commuter Connections provides free ride matching and commuter services in the Washington metropolitan region. Sign up at commuterconnections.org. That's commuterconnections.org or call 800-745-RIDE.
Join Jim Fleisig on Tuesday, October 23rd at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. Identify management, progress, and best practices. The panel includes government leaders from NIST, DHS, and GSA. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Tuesday, October 23rd at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Quest Software, HP, and Route 1.
Which Vet? From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. It may not be just fat that raises the risk of diabetes. It may be which vet. At the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas, researchers looked at about 7 years of data on 732 obese people. The researchers compared visceral fat, the kind around organs, with other fat that creates, for instance, pot bellies. Researcher Ian Neeland found no additional risk with other fat, but he says
people in the highest third of visceral fat had over three times greater likelihood of getting diabetes than people in the bottom third.
You can't see visceral fat levels without expensive imaging, so Neeland advises controlling fat all over. The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Pending legislation, federal budget cuts, contracting efficiencies, contract management best practices, acquisition trends, and the relationship of government and industry will be discussed at NCMA's upcoming 31st Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. Hear from Ted Leonsis, CEO of Monumental Sports and Entertainment, Frank Kendall, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, and General George Casey, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff. Learn more at ncmahq.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests on the program today for a special edition of Industry Chatter are the new leaders of ACT-IAC, Darren Ash and Dale Lutke. And I'm just going to get it out of the way now. At some point over the course of the hour, I'm going to reverse your names. And I'm going to call the wrong guy the wrong name, and because you're both D's, and I'm a little bit squirrely today, and I apologize ahead of time.
I would
for
not
that.
Be at all embarrassed to be called Darren.
Well, I was going to say, you know, that would be good for you. I'm not so sure what I would say.
Well, see, I can't speak for him.
There you go. But I appreciate both of you gentlemen being here today. I was mentioning before we went on the air, ELC is my favorite event of the year. The content is always top notch. The execution is excellent. I'm biased toward the location because I'm a geek for Williamsburg, completely separated from anything to do with government and industry. So I'm really looking forward to the event next year. What is the plan to make it, to improve on what has been done in the past, which is I imagine, pretty hard to do?
Well, the thing about ELC, I think it is, it's an iconic event, and I think you named it very, very well as far as being a most favorite thing for a lot of people to do in our industry. And I think what draws it is the fact that we're able to continue to bring in informed people that are both in a plenary role and in a panel role and in a facilitator role. And they are just smart on what is going on, and they can talk about things which are of interest to people to talk about. But I think the real beauty about ELC is it's what goes on in the sessions, but it's really what goes on in the hallways after the session. It's about the discussion that goes on afterwards. And what we're doing this year in particular for ELC is not only we're putting out the quadrennial review, which is a very important activity itself, but we're going to take a lot of time and record, if you will, those things that we felt were solid points of further investigation or further dialogue, and we're going to purposely program them in for our Management of Change Conference or our Acquisition Excellence Conference. We're going to take some things, not all things, but some things that we've really caught the attention of people and bleed them into new things down the road, following upon the continuum that Darren talked about and the outcome things that we're both interested in.
For the government attendees, and we're expecting about 150. Actually, one of the nice things about ELC, as opposed to a lot of other events or conferences, we look at about a 4-to-1 ratio of industry to government. So it's a nice mix. It also enables a lot of the good dialogue. One of the things that occurred last year was the ELC ends about noon each year on that Tuesday. And what we did last year was a government-to-government session only, government attendees only. And they sat with Lisa Schlosser, Mary Davey, and had a healthy dialogue, just government. Only government in the room about the issues, about what they heard. We're going to do that again this year. In this case, this year we've lined up Steve Van Roekel, the federal CIO, to participate in that discussion. This is also one of the cool things about it. These are not just the CIOs in the room. These are other government attendees. They could be the GS-15s. They could be the CTOs. It's a good discussion, and it's good for us to hear from Mr. Van Roekel, but for them to hear from him to hear from us as well.
I recall walking the halls last year and thinking, Dale, exactly what you were just talking about, that the dialogue that was happening there in the halls between the panels wasn't about golf or what's for dinner tonight or whatever. These are people that are really focused on the business at hand. And I imagine this year a lot of it's going to revolve around, what are we going to do budget-wise? How do we handle what is happening or not happening with sequestration and all of those kinds of things? These are and one conversation in particular, I'm not going to say the names of the people, but I thought, boy, oh, boy, if we could take a picture of that and let people know that this is what the leaders in government are doing at something like this.
It's a neat opportunity. I remember recalling going last year and sitting and listening to somebody from the Internal Revenue Service talk about what they were doing with the mobility. And to say, I didn't know that. I didn't know what they were doing. I don't normally interact with the IRS other than pay my taxes, file my tax return. But to know what they were doing with mobility and knowing that I had an opportunity to reach out to them both during the event as well as after the event to hear. but also to share what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is one of the neat things about ELSA.
I think there's a misperception that you meet with your peers at the CIO Council and the other CXOs meet with their peers in the appropriate councils, and that constitutes the interaction. And you know that's not true. Folks, you know, I've talked to enough of your peers to know that that's not how it works. But that's not the place really where dialogue like that's able to happen either.
When you go to a federal CIO council meeting or a federal CFO council meeting, you go there, you're right, you're there with your peers, but it's 1 hour, 2 hours. It's a quick discussion. You hear some really good information about what's coming down the line, feedback and so forth, but then you leave. And I think with what you get at these types of events is that dialogue in the hallways about what are you doing? What are you doing about mobility? What are you doing about bring your own device? What challenges have you faced with big data? That's a prime opportunity for an IT leader from one agency to speak to another IT leader from another agency.
Dale, go ahead.
I think it is the combination of things. We've got tracks around mobility and the knowledge workforce, the big data activity, of course, and then government IT optimization. And the optimization would tell you, what do we want to do? We want to do things more cost effectively. How do you do that? Well, you want to make sure that people have access to information they need when they need it, and they can get it whether they're off-site or on-site, and they know how to use it. So all four things are germane to how you get a more holistic application, if you will, of technology in the user scenario, not in the IT scenario, but in the user scenario. So it's all four together, and I believe they've crafted a very nice program here with the complimentary speakers as well to reinforce the fact that it's not just one. It's a combination of things that make us very effective.
It's not hard to go there. You'll just have to go once and understand the value for the people who attend it, especially on the government side. But given the climate that we're in right now, and it goes without saying where we are in the conference space in government, Darren talked a little bit earlier, Dale, about the efforts that you're going to take to make this information stick and make it valuable 365 days this coming year rather than 3 days. Tell me more about what it is that you're going to do so that folks have real takeaways, and when they get back on Wednesday to their agencies, they're going to have new material, be armed with stuff that they can really move forward on.
Well, like any other activity, you get out of it what you put into it. So much of it is dependent on the individual coming armed and ready to have a dialogue, to participate. And in that participation, they will learn. I'll guarantee you they will learn. In addition to that, though, it's about don't let the learning stop. I think that's the important part. ACT IAC is all about learning, collaborating, and then taking some action on that learning and collaboration. It's the action part I think we sometimes forget about, because we just assume that we've learned something, therefore I'm going to go work on that. And it's the combination of things. And I talked a little bit before about how we're being more inclusive and understand. Actually, this came out of the ACT strategic agenda, being more inclusive. And bring the diversity in of the functional user, understand what they're looking for, and on that content, then have a richer dialogue, a richer learning, if you will, and don't be satisfied with that one learning. Move it to the next level of discussion, which is why we talk about the continuum. Now, what we're doing within IAC is we created these things called value flows. Now, the value flows will take things that we've accomplished. I'll give you a good, for instance, acquisition excellence we had last year. Acquisition Excellence was a partnership between ACT, IAC, and GSA. Wonderful event. It was just terrific. One-day event. Out of that came a number of things. One of the key things that came out was this thing called the Standard-Based Acquisition White Paper. Now, that had been talked about before, but it got some real legs at that conference because people actually started getting some real passion around it. And that passion, if you will, generated content and understanding and people that were willing to put the time and effort into making it happen. See? So the learning is something that occurred there, but the action was the actual paper itself. Now, I don't expect that paper to stop there either. I expect that paper to get good read and then some more information and some real policy come out of that, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Very much so.
Yeah, you could see that paper roll into a shared interest group.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or to be elaborated again at the next, at Acquisition Excellence, Small Business Conference, or Management of Change.
You mentioned the shared interest groups, and we've talked about those earlier in the program. And the other thing that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet, and I want to when we come back, is the Institute for Innovation, because everybody, that's one of the buzzwords for 2013 for government is innovation. So we'll talk about those when we come back with the leadership of ACT IACT, Aaron Ash and Dale Ludeke, my guests for the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This week's Experts in Health topic is the flu vaccine, featuring Dr. Peter Kadlecek, an infectious disease physician with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Capitol Hill Medical Center.
Flu season is almost here. That means it's time for your annual flu shot. Influenza is a serious disease that can lead to hospitalization and, in some cases, death. Between October and May, flu viruses circulate throughout our communities. An important way to fight against influenza is to get an annual flu vaccine, particularly for those who are at high risk for developing complications should they get sick. These include people with chronic medical conditions like asthma and diabetes, pregnant women, and people over 65 years old. At Kaiser Permanente, we are the best in the region at ensuring adults receive their flu shots.
Dr. Kadlecek was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. Flu shot for adult rate as reported in 2011 HEDIS.
Beth Ann Telford found out 7 years ago she had brain cancer. Her doctors told her she would never run again. But now, Telford is defying the odds. The government printing office employee recently competed in the Ironman World Championship, which includes swimming, biking, and running a marathon. What motivates Telford to keep moving forward, and how did she finish the race? Federal News Radio goes behind the scenes with Telford at a recent training session. Watch the video at federalnewsradio.com. Search Ironman.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Darren Ash and Dale Ludeke of ACT IACT, my guests on the program today. And Darren, you mentioned shared interest groups earlier in the program. Tell me what shared interest groups are, what they cover, what some of them that exist are, what can be the driver for creation of a new one, all of those kinds of things.
There are a variety of shared interest groups covering everything from enterprise architecture to human capital to something we call collaboration and transformation, really a mixed bag of different issues. I think we've got healthcare as well.
Yes.
Yeah, healthcare. Just a number of them. Each of the SIGs, the shared interest groups, is driven by the priorities and the agenda for each of the shared interest groups is set by a government advisory panel. The government advisory panels are made up of representatives from individuals representing different agencies, cross-cut of agencies. So they set the agenda. Part of it needs to be driven out of the ACT-IAC agenda. They develop white papers. They have panels. Part of it is to drive that conversation, drive the discussion, to identify best practices. And they've done a number of pieces, number of things. I know one that was noteworthy for us was some work at the request of OMB on financial management. One of the shared interest groups took that, ran with it, and provided some good insights back to OMB about financial management modernization.
And who participates in those?
It is a mix of government and industry, which is the thing, which is really part of that driving force behind ACT-IAC. It is not exclusively industry. It can't be.
Mm-hmm. As these shared interest groups develop products, are they fluid? Do they stick around? Do they come up with a particular approach to a problem, challenge, whatever, and then dissolve? Or how do they work?
Well, I'll give you two instances. We did a VISTA study for VA at the request of Roger Baker. And it was, again, it was a company agnostic activity, some very smart people who really understood open source environments, really understood the things that VA were dealing with around the VISTA system. And that was done, but it didn't stop there. We spent, I don't know how many more months after that thing was submitted, going around and talking to different advocates and interested parties in VISTA around the results of that actual study. So we spread that word around quite dramatically. The other part is the financial management system sustainment paper that Darren was talking about, which was done by our collaboration transformation SIG. They did that paper. It went over to OMB. And as a matter of fact, Danny Werfel was the benefactor of that. And we're now looking at doing a second iteration of that. Based on that paper, there are other things that they would like to have an industry input on based upon a government request that would give them some different data points about management systems that are suited to financial activity as well as their sustainment going forward. So both of those, I think, show that there's a continuing activity on those things. They do have a life.
And that's what I was getting at, the fact that these are not ephemeral. They are they exist for long periods of time to achieve a number of goal after goal after goal and so on.
And I think what you're right. And I think what we learned from the VA, the VISTA project, was there's other big, meaty issues out there that we can help solve, that we can provide some thought leadership, that we can provide some potential ideas for solutions. That led to ultimately the formation and the creation of what we call the Institute for Innovation.
Nice segue.
You're welcome.
Very well done.
Thank you.
I didn't even have to do it.
You're welcome. The Institute for Innovation is meant to be that collaborative forum. It is industry funded. The Institute does not receive any government funds. And actually, that's a key point about ACT-IAC. ACT-IAC does not receive any government funds. But it is intended to tackle those big issues that are offered up, suggested by government, requested by government, or or industry, to help us solve those issues, to be able to pull some real thought leaders together and help us solve it.
The Institute for Innovation is, I think, interestingly titled, because as I mentioned before, the word innovation is a tremendous buzzword. Agencies say, we want innovation. They come to companies like yours, Dale, and they say, show us something innovative. And I hear varying degrees of guidance that you get or that you're able to give back to them, depending who I'm talking to, about innovation. What are you hearing from the people that you're working with that innovation looks like in the federal space right now?
So like a lot of things in life, Francis, innovation is always in the eye of the beholder, just like value, right? And I think that's one of the tougher challenges we have. We just had this discussion this morning with the acting administrator. The ability to define, if you will, a baseline from which you're operating and then the requirements or the needs from that baseline where you want to make an improvement in your cost, in your performance, in your functionality, in your ability to go through an audit. There's all sorts of things that are beneficial. What is the innovation you want, and what are you willing to go at risk to get it, right? So you may have the innovation, but the implementation of innovation has a risk associated with it in that it's something new and something different. So there's a lot of disruptive attributes to innovation, which is one of the reasons why I think the Institute is such a very appropriate place to look at it, because one of the things they look at, it is a nonpartisan forum. It's looking for those brain-busting kind of things, which people just can't get their heads wrapped around for whatever reason, and looks at it from a holistic viewpoint as to what are the enterprise elements associated here, all the fiscal, technological, process, functional attributes associated with it, and how would we tackle this problem if we tackled it?
Mm-hmm.
And then start to lay out a way to go and actually address the issue in such a way where it can provide some good information back. It's not going to solve the issue, perhaps, but it continues the conversation, perhaps frames the problem in such a way that it can be discussed, which is part of what we're trying to do at the Institute. And by the way, this is a total grassroots effort. This was something that, to Darren's point, came out of some kind of VISTA activity, financial management activity, and we just saw this as a real need. And it actually is a good indicator of our desire to have this continuum. We don't want to talk about it once. We want to talk about it a lot of times, but every time we talk about it, we want to advance the conversation. I think that's what the Institute does for us.
You have talked, both of you, throughout the course of the program about a lot of very positive things, and you have a pretty ambitious agenda to complete in the time that you're in office. I want to talk about potentially the flip side of that to wrap up our conversation when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose. My guests, Dale Ludke and Darren Ash of ACT-IAC on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The year was 1933, and a 23-year-old engineer named Kelly Johnson was feeling the heat.
His bosses at Lockheed Aircraft were betting the future of the company on a new plane, the first to be outfitted with twin engines. What was keeping Johnson up at night was his concern about the stability of the design and what to do about it. Now, after 70 tests in a wind tunnel, he had the answer. Something no one had tried before. Kelly Johnson's twin tail concept for the Model 10 Electra not only stabilized the plane, but also helped usher in a new era in aviation technology. In less than a decade, a Model 12 was flying missions over North Africa, and a Model 14 had flown around the world in record time. The all-metal twin-engine Electra was flying high, and so is Lockheed Aircraft. The Electra story is our story. See it unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit MyVillageGreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
Are you a loyal credit card user and your only reward is a high interest rate? Anyone can join State Department Federal Credit Union and take advantage of their Visa Platinum credit card. Just a 6.99% APR, plus earn one reward point for every dollar you spend. And there is no foreign transaction or balance transfer fees. Visit sdfcu.org. Annual percentage rate is based on evaluation of applicants' credit. SDFCU is federally insured by the NCUA.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 58th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 22nd through the 24th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For information, please visit 2012AUSAAnnualMeeting.org.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests on Industry Chatter today, Darren Ash and Dale Ludke of ACT IAC. And I mentioned that there is potentially a flip side to the ambitious agenda that you both have set out. What are the roadblocks that you see? What are the potential challenges or places that you could find setbacks in this agenda over the next several months? Dale, start with you.
So I don't think anybody can deny that there are some fiscal pressures coming. And I think those fiscal pressures have impact everywhere. No kidding. So the way I view that is this. We have to overcome fear and apathy with fact and dialogue. Okay. And what I mean by that is that we are going to have to remain focused on objectives, but focus on objectives that we can accomplish with the resource that's applied. We may not have as much resource as we think we have right now, but we can still get things done. So let's focus on those things we can get done with the resource provided. A second part of that is let's define the value being delivered. Let's be honest about what we think is actually a value and have a good dialogue around that so that people are not losing interest or are somehow missing the idea that we're trying to convey across. And the last thing is something that I think is very important. That is, a smile goes a mile. You know, we just have to keep an attitude about this that, okay, we're all in this together. You know, it's not us against them. It's an ACT-IAC kind of thinking that we can actually look at these problems from a holistic viewpoint, have a good conversation, and get rid of that fear and apathy.
Darren, what do you see as the potential roadblocks to achieving what you want to get done?
I think fundamentally it's overcoming some of the myths that are out there, perceptions and optics. You know, for myths and perceptions, you know, it is okay to talk to industry. It is okay to talk to industry during the right times during your acquisition process. To have industry days, to have conversations, to share what you're thinking about, to get ideas. There, the FAR, the Federal Acquisition Guidelines, the regulations, really allow for a lot of this stuff to happen. There's enough myth and perceptions out there that we can't. We can. There's a lot of things that we can do legally and rightfully to best understand and describe what our requirements are to get the best products and services possible. The other one is the perceptions and optics, perceptions about conferences, training events. If you do it right, these are incredibly valuable opportunities for individuals, both in industry and government, to learn, to develop as leaders, to grow. And these types of conferences like ELC are done right.
I appreciate both of you being here today, gentlemen. We're almost out of time. You wanted to sneak one last word in, Dale?
I'll give a real quick story about that. At the Acquisition Excellence Conference last year, we had young acquisition professionals on stage, and they were so confident, they were candid, and they were thinking of acquisition and the FAR itself as a tool, not an absolute. They thought about things they could do to actually get things done, which included working with industry. I was really happy to hear that from them.
Congratulations on both of you assuming these roles, and I appreciate you very much coming in to talk about them, and I hope it's not the last time between now and June when you leave these roles. And you're succeeded by Rick Holgate, and you will be succeeded by Jim Williams,
right,
of Dayon. And so you can be very confident that the work that you get done is going to be picked up by two very capable people. Thank you very much, Darren.
Thank you.
Dale Ludeke, I appreciate you being here.